3:30. And first on the agenda, we have some further discussion on the library assistant number 2 position. And there's an attachment in our packet. Audrey, did you want to comment further? Or?
No, I think this is a really good overview. It really talks about the process and how it relates to our strategic plan, and how with that strategic plan, we are being much more intentional. And you can see the results of how we've changed our programming has been really huge in terms of how the public has responded, and they're coming to the library to attend all of our programming. And this position is in support of that programming. And it's really because of that strategic planning and how we've executed.
All right, questions?
The 115,000 number, that's... How is that calculated? I'm just interested. I'm always interested in the comings and goings and people calculations on it at the library, because it's such a busy headcount.
We do headcount. Mm-hmm. Yep.
I appreciate that.
Yep. So every program, we enter it in after the program.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So,
go ahead.
So those are the number of people in the programs, not the number of people necessarily walking through the door.
Correct. So we have more than 500,000 people who walk through our doors every year.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Other questions, comments? As it stands right now, this position is not in the budget?
It's not in the budget. Okay. Awaiting your any direction.
Yes.
It's the dollars are allocated.
All right. Anyone else? Mr. Campion?
I found the library's justification more than adequate. I think you guys have been doing the same belt tightening that everyone's been doing. And I generally want to support the strategic goal of managing our hiring on a 5-year basis. So I'm going to be in support of this position. Not doing it this year is going to put us in a deficit for future years. I think continuing to stay on pace will more consistently deliver both levy impacts and service that people have come to expect. So I think that's my position on it.
I also support this position. If you actually look from the year 2000 to present, actually the library has done more belt tightening than most of our organization has. And I think it's important that we respect the strategic process of all of our department heads working together. The library is one of the core missions of the city of Rochester, in my opinion, and I don't want them to play second fiddle to anyone. This is a well-thought-out strategic planning activity and a position that was deemed to be very necessary, and I'm going to support my staff on that.
One of the questions that popped into my mind as I was reading this, and this is perhaps a discussion for future, is I do wonder what the scope is of a public library as we go forward. When I read comments like helping perhaps help program the street festival, and I don't know, is that in the scope of the library? And again, I'll be the first to admit I'm old school in terms of what I think a library is. And I realize it's much more than, you know, books and magazines these days. But I do wonder where the boundaries are as we look into the future. Or just something that...
What I would throw out too, we have a public library board. It's one of the three organizations that by charter are defined to have their own particular guidance, so I think that would be a good conversation to have jointly with them, because there are a lot of them establishing what the community needs for a library is.
And how, so during our strategic planning process, we really, with our community focus group, we talked about what were the things that were really important to the community, and they came up with being welcoming and inclusive, education, and workforce. And then had a really hard conversation about then what's the library's role in that. Not that we take those on, But if that's what's most important to the community, then what's the library's role? And so those were some of the really good conversations that happened during the strategic planning process. And that focus group was really a wide group of people within our community, homeschoolers, business people, social services, really a wide spectrum of our community that were part of those conversations.
Mr. Hickey.
So I guess going into this, the fact that this was a priority for the department heads, you know, there's a lot of competition, so I was generally supportive, but I will say I was kind of surprised by the vagueness of this justification. I kind of expected, you know, here's a critical need, we need this person, this is what they're going to be doing, and it's, you know, engage the community, make sure individuals feel part of the community through inclusiveness and connection. I mean, it's nice, but it's a little vague. I was just surprised that it wasn't more specific. This is such a critical need. This is exactly what this person's going to be doing. So,
okay.
Mr. Roscoe.
Well, we're here because of me, so I'll speak to this. You know, the information that we were provided here is it spells out some things, but you know, planning is good. We've got a library board that's strategically looking ahead, and that's good to have. But the library board is not funding this; the taxpayers are. So, when I look at this. You know, I know there's a lot of great people that work at the library. I used to serve on the library board. So I understand the things that are going on. But when we were at the Truth in Taxation, we heard from a lot of people, and we've heard of people since then. And when every time we talked about a department, Gary Newman would always say, well, that's pretty much the same except for the employee services. The cost of the employees is going up, and then plus the cost of employees is going up. Now, at the library, we have 52.75 people proposed with an average compensation or cost of the employee is $103,583 per employee. So, you know, at $6.675 million that this budget is costing the city of a total of $7.8 million, you know, where does it stop and where do we start to say that these things are nice but not needed? So, again, you know, if we're going to spend $103,000 on a new employee, I'd prefer to see it be a police officer or the some of the essential services that are out there that we hear about, but I understand that the board has this, and if I'm on my own on this one, I'm okay with it, but I just don't see that, you know, we added, a person to help with reading a year or so ago, and I wasn't supportive of that either. I don't think that the library should be out teaching people how to, you know, that's not the role that I see the library in, and I served on the board. If I'm off on this one, I'll understand that and respect whatever my peers vote on this, those are the points that I have that concern me about this.
Well, and I would just say that the library is both nice and desperately needed, and I feel that the an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, and we all understand what the importance of third grade reading levels are for folks, and this is part of why I say that you know, these amenities that we have in the community have every bit to do with our rates of crime and our quality of life in the community, just as critical public safety needs are. And that's why I'm going to still say the library is not an accessory. It's not something that's unneeded in the community. It's a part of who we are.
And that's an excellent point, and I wouldn't argue that at all. There's clearly a benefit for the education aspect and the ability to read and what that means to a person's life. Where I started, and the reason I made the comment I did, is I start to get a little squeamish when we talk about programming street festivals and so forth. If we're promoting reading and access to education and so forth, you know, clearly I'm 100% with you. I would just caution that we're careful not to get into some other things that become more wants than needs.
And here's what I'll say about the Festival Street thing is we're looking at ways to, because of our lack of space, the ability to go out into the street gives us opportunities that we don't have with our current space. So we're not necessarily looking to get into other kinds of programming, but looking at how we can be creative with what we, with the opportunities that are presented to us.
Okay. All right. Other comments? Or what's the consensus on whether to include or exclude this position for the 2018?
Include.
Pardon?
Include.
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 So the consensus, not unanimous, and I respect that, we'll include it for this year. But again, I think it's been good discussion in terms of how we frame what the mission and vision is for the library as we go forward. Mr. Campion?
I would just say to Councilman Ruska, thank you for fighting for things you may not get support on, because there's plenty of times we all have to not understand our fellow council members and fight them on things we think are justified. I think queuing up a discussion for 2018 about the scope, frankly giving an opportunity for the library to put together some information about not only what are they doing, but I think that why is also important, that we can kind of combine those together. Maybe it's things we just don't see eye to eye on, but maybe also if we're all on the same page, we'll be able to kind of justify collaboratively the funding a little bit better. But I think it's okay to disagree once in a while, hopefully not too violently, but appreciate it.
Respectfully.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Moving on, we are now ready to discuss the third section of the proposed plan that's being brought forward. So, Lindsay, you want to take it from here?
Sections 1 and 2, the vision, and kind of highlighted key principles. What we're looking at in Section 3 is really how we activate those principles and put them into use. There's really three kind of sections in this particular chapter. One that's relatively short that talks, kind of presents a statement on citywide growth patterns. I'll get into each of these out in a bit more detail. Kind of the meat of Section 3 is a summary of the goals and policies of the plan. And then the third main piece of Section 3 is really the implementation priorities that are recommended. So moving to the next slide. Before I jump into kind of talking about each of those, just want to kind of take a step back a little bit. We get a lot of questions about purpose of the plan and what it's used for. I think I just wanted to highlight the fact that we need to keep in mind that the comprehensive plan is really future-oriented, and the focus of it is kind of on defining the destination that we want to get to. It's really long on setting direction, but it really doesn't get into the detail of what are the tactics for accomplishing the goals, right? So that's why we have a series of implementation steps that we talked about, that we'll be talking about here, things like updating the land development manual, things about how you incorporate the recommendations in the plan and the capital improvements and other programs and things like that. So I think everybody needs to keep in mind that this is really the guide. And it really focuses on physical development of the city. So land use and transportation are really the bulk of the information that's discussed in the plan. So in the framework, in the policy framework, basically, we have two levels of policies. One are goals, which are kind of broad statements. that set the path forward, and then each goal is supported by one or more policies that basically provide or describe a statement of intent or principle of action that then will be carried out subsequently, whether that's through the land development manual or other programs, such as improvements program or small area studies or other measures. So with that, let's look at the statement on citywide growth, and I'm not going to go through everything here. I'm assuming you really had an opportunity to read this. But the citywide growth statements are really a series of outcome-oriented statements in which we try and describe the vision of the plan in the context of physical development. So what are the policies of this plan mean in the context of physical development? So real briefly, just to jump to the document for a second here, we can look at page 250, which is, I think, the third page of this section, but it's really just the one page summary with about 12 to 15 statements that really highlight those dozen or so concepts in terms of what's really, where is this plan trying to push the community in terms of land use. The other piece of those statements then is when they obviously complement the development vision plan, which was in section one, which is really the high 10,000 foot level in terms of what's the view, what's the vision for the community. If you remember on the development vision plan, basically we're looking and identifying four major types of areas in the community, those being neighborhoods, the centers, corridors, and then along with that kind of the more general purpose land use districts. So just to contrast the growth statements with the vision of the plan. The vision of the plan, if you remember back, we presented this before, we had a number of statements, kind of aspirational level statements, based largely on the input that we received from the community about what people's hopes and goals were for the future as far as the community. So just a couple of examples here of what those vision statements were. We wanted to see a community characterized by safe and friendly neighborhoods with diverse and affordable housing options, a thriving downtown with vibrant public spaces and easy access to park and open spaces. So the growth statements then really kind of take those visions, make them more try and describe that the various vision pieces in more concrete terms, again, relative to physical development. So you see, for example, the growth statement that talks about diversity of housing choices as part of new development on greenfield sites, as well as through infill and redevelopment in targeted areas. And in terms of downtown, that the goal, the outcome we're striving for is a major mixed-use, high-intensity center that supports a growing residential population with expanded entertainment, cultural options, and an environment that promotes economic innovation and employment growth. So the growth statements try and take us to a little bit more concrete place from that big picture vision statement that we had. So moving to the second area, the actual goal and policy statements. We have a total of 22 goal statements that were identified, and those are supported by 92 policy statements. They basically fall into five main areas. We obviously have substantial set of goals and policies related to future land use and also related to transportation. And then we have smaller sets in terms of housing, environment and health, and growth framework. So we'll cover each of these moving forward. We'll start with the growth framework one. The growth framework really looks at the framework that's suggested in the plan in terms of the future growth. Looking at the footprint of the city and where we expect to expand in the future. The goal the growth framework policies is really to look at how do we provide for growth in a cost-effective and efficient manner as the city grows both within the existing urban service area and as well as expands beyond that as the need for physical growth occurs in the future. So the policies under this particular goal talks about directing growth towards areas where we have existing infrastructure capacity, a very kind of important goal that's revisited a number of times throughout the narrative of the plan. Because of the area that's been identified in terms of the growth area, we expect to see limited expansion beyond what you see illustrated on the map in terms of the future footprint of the city area. Annexation is expected to be a prerequisite to the provision of services, and adequate public facilities are a prerequisite to the approval of development. And kind of at a higher level, that we use infrastructure investment to guide the development in the desired direction in the future, and we prioritize investments based on network level asset management. And what that means is that is we look at making decisions about where to invest, whether that's in new infrastructure or maintenance of existing infrastructure, that those decisions are based on an evaluation of the entire system, whether that would be the street system, sewer system, water system, whatever, but they were really taking a network level look at all the different types of infrastructure and making those decisions about where to put the city's dollars.
A side note on that is a number of months ago, you had a presentation on the sanitary sewer system and what it would take to serve all of the sewer sheds that could be into Rochester. That the maps that you had seen then identified sewer sheds that could accommodate really 80 to 100 years or more of growth for the city. What this plan does, it helps us to identify where are the priority areas, though, in the next 20 to 30 years that we need to invest in if we are going to expand our services.
Would you guys prefer to finish your presentation before I start allowing questions, or do you want to... There's a few areas I see on this map which are in the yellow that are kind of concerning to me because I have heard approximations of available infrastructure nearing zero. So I'm wondering in particular, there's the northwest area along Highway 52 there south of 75th Street, that would require a pretty significant outlay of money in order to reconfigure infrastructure to be able to support that. And yet that's being labeled as yellow near-term growth. I'm wondering, have those maps that you're describing, I think are so incredibly important to making this sustainable, they're already influencing what we're seeing here, or are you saying that needs to be added as an additional consideration point?
So creating the maps was very iterative in working with the sanitary sewer study and in the public works as well. What you see for boundaries here, actually in the yellow, should reflect what we can serve with the system that's in place. There's a little bit of a knob or a ridge line around 65th Street and goes just north of that a little ways, and that's picking up some of that. But it does not pick up the huge investment that would be required for serving what we had previously referred to as the Northwest Territory. So that's actually orange. This would be the area that we can serve, and that does reflect the boundaries.
Okay, because what I heard is that area you just highlighted was going to require a reconfiguration of the services out there. This is neither here nor there. I just see some spots up here that cause concern. Is adoption of the document codifying those as spaces that should be targeted by our development community?
It is. Adoption is really signifying to them the anticipated timeline in which we expect services will be available. If you have concern about other places, let us know. But that one should reflect capitalizing on the investment.
Okay, I noted it. I'll bring it up. Thank you.
And one thing to understand about the areas in yellow, so the areas in yellow are those areas where, given the existing system, service would be most readily available. But even in those areas, particularly, and there's no maybe great reference here, maybe think of 7th Street North, you know, extended east and west. Everything south of that, that's in yellow. Any development in an area such as that is going to have to do an assessment of capacity availability, because there are, you know, problems basically that cover the entire southern two-thirds of the city. So there's an expectation that's discussed in the plan that there will be some kind of assessment process early on, probably in front of even a general development plan process, to determine how much capacity, if any, is available, or whether an area has to wait for some investment. So let's move on to the second major group, and this is the future land use map. There's about a half dozen bold statements associated with the future land use topic. Again, these, and, you know, in the previous presentations, we've touched on most of these things. Closer integration of the coordination of land use and transportation strategies, encouraging transit-oriented development in designated zones and corridors associated with the proposed primary transit network, preserving neighborhood quality and character, achieving revitalization and encouraging more compact growth through infilling redevelopment, ensuring compatibility of uses, and facilitating growth downtown consistent with its role as a regional center. So those, again, are sort of the six pieces of the refined land use vision for the community, and then a set of policies that go along with them. And I'm not going to touch on all of them. I tried to, again, pick out sort of the highlights here. There's, I think, about two dozen land use policies associated with those six goals. But some of the key ones on the thinking about the land use pattern of the city, want to provide for greater diversity of housing style, particularly in greenfield areas and also along with infill and redevelopment. We want to support the primary transit network through creating transit-oriented either overlay or zoning-type districts that discuss standards for mixed use, what pedestrian-oriented design means, and also encouraging a level of density in those areas that's transit supportive. So we really need to try and target if the PTN concept is going to be successful, that along the major, you know, Broadway corridor, 2nd Street, 4th Street areas where we've identified for the future PTN, that we achieve a certain level of density along those corridors to generate adequate ridership. Third bullet there on the left really focuses on the neighborhoods and adjacent to the downtown area, where we're really looking to try and facilitate a mix of housing styles, neighborhood scale, retail and service uses as being appropriate in those areas, and other community serving uses. And then the fourth bullet again, touching on downtown, support for downtown development as kind of the center of not just the city, but really serving as the regional center and doing what we can in terms of providing for a diversity of use and a high intensity of development in the downtown. And then some of the policies also talk about tools, so things like how do we manage the transition from higher density or higher impact kind of land uses to lower density and lower impact uses. And we think one thing that the plan supports is going beyond sort of the basics that we have today of lot size, setbacks, you know, where parking can be on the lot, and probably supplement that with some guidelines and tools that actually get into form and character of development and scale of development when you're in kind of these buffer transition areas. And then also looking at facilitating infill and redevelopment to better utilize existing infrastructure. Again, given where that infill and redevelopment is going to occur, having guidance along with that that talks about character and quality of development. And then the last two bullets here really thinking about how the city uses its investment to revitalize, you know, and the purposes of that investment, how it can be used. One area being that investment or put dollars into areas where it can serve as kind of the catalyst for revitalization or to attract private redevelopment. And also kind of one main focus area, kind of a subset of that, is using not only investment but also other tools like economic development incentives and so on to revitalize underperforming commercial centers and corridors. So again, partly related to the PTN, but really related to the whole idea of the gateways in the community, North Broadway, South Broadway, and some other corridors, where we heard comments during the public input phase of this about people really wanting to see upgrading of the character of those corridors, and also understanding that some of those areas we really do have investment and private development that's been there and for many, many decades, and there may be a need, you know, this may be the time to try and really encourage the revitalization. So, in the land use, any questions or comments? Now we'll move on to third major area, transportation. Given the nature here, there turns out to be, this is sort of the biggest set of goals and policies. We have 12 different goal statements related to transportation. About half of those really look at the system emphasis, and then the other half really sort of focus in on particular modes. Won't really probably go through all of these here, but just understand that in terms of the system, we really want to support a comprehensive suite of travel options, and land use plays a role in making that a success. So that gets back to the overarching goal of integrating land use and transportation. Want to try and make people who prefer to choose transit as their mode of travel that make that more competitive in terms of cost and time. Safety is obviously always a priority in terms of developing transportation infrastructure. The plan does provide for some emphasis and discusses the idea of context-sensitive design. And when we look at designing an arterial street, we want to be aware of the surrounding land use and the character of that land use and reflect that in the design of the street. And in terms of the modal emphasis, as we've been before, the plan talks a fair amount about this concept of a primary transit network and how to make that happen. We think another important element of the plan that we need to recognize, looking at our workforce needs in the community, is that we really need to continue to build upon a suite of commuter services that are services available to commuters, particularly to get people in and out of downtown. And we look at a potential close to doubling of the employment level in downtown with the BNC initiative. So some real challenges there. The plan talks a little bit about the future, but not to any great extent at this time, about the emergence of, you know, new ideas, autonomous vehicles, shared mobility. We think that the key thing there at this point is really not so much to set forth a future path per se, but just continue monitoring and looking at what kind of options are available, and with the goal that we update this plan, or at least revisit the plan every 5 years, that 5 years from now we'll have hopefully a much better idea of where those kind of emerging technologies may be going, so that we'll have the opportunity to better define our future path in terms of those kinds of opportunities down the road here.
John,
before you
leave that page,
strikes
me that maybe some folks in the room who are not familiar with the terms mode or modal, and if you could just at a high level explain those, that would be helpful.
Well, when we talk about mode, we're really trying to look at not just vehicular travel, which obviously can continue to be a priority and has been a major priority in the past, but also looking at developing a system that makes other options, whether that's transit, people who might choose to use bicycle as their preferred mode of travel for certain trips, as well as pedestrian travel. Looking at all those and providing safe, convenient, and comfortable opportunities, no matter what choice of mode they may choose to use for a particular trip. So really trying to look across the spectrum of travel choices.
But that's within the city. It's not like here, the airport doesn't get...
We don't get into that
to
any great extent other than making a general statement about commercial services, of which air is obviously not. On the next page, in terms of the policy highlights related to transportation, again, following kind of the breakdown of the goals into system development and modal priorities on the system side, again, trying to create a transit infrastructure with the idea of a primary transit network that will really become the anchor in the future for higher frequency and higher quality service, we believe. We want to look at, the plan looks at priorities in terms of network connectivity. So if we take any individual mode, whether that might be cycling or transit, thinking about where there are gaps in that particular modal network, which identifies areas where that we may want to target in the future for investment. Safety, as I said, is a priority. The concept of compact and walkable development patterns. So pretty much no matter where we're at, whether it's in the neighborhood, whether it's downtown in a commercial area, we want to ensure that from the viewpoint of a pedestrian that we have safe and comfortable facilities available for them. That goes beyond, obviously we have a policy which has been very useful. It says all new development will require some, you know, will be required to install pedestrian facilities. This really takes that concept really beyond just the physical installation. It talks about, for example, in the layout of a neighborhood, do we have a connected street system that allows for relatively convenient access to the transit stops that serve the neighborhood or provides convenient access to the park facilities in the neighborhood, those kinds of things. So you're really talking about pedestrian friendliness. You get beyond just the facility itself and think about, you know, those corridors that people use and do they conveniently get people to where they want to go. So there's some discussion of that in the plan. Relative to downtown, parking policy will really kind of take on an important role as we try and sort of incentivize different choices relative to commuters who work downtown. So a lot of this particular work will evolve out of the DMC transportation plans, which are nearing their completion. Those plans will have some discussion about what kinds of approaches to whether it's policy or location of parking that can help support people who might choose to do something other than, you know, drive to work in a private vehicle. So that's discussed in the policy terms in the plan. And just picking up on our complete streets policy, recognizing that streets should be designed for all users and again should reflect and respond to the surrounding land use context in which they're in. And then in terms of the modal priorities and just supporting a range of mobility and options and services for commuters, supporting the development of information services and platforms that connect users to information about different types of travel options, making walking and biking a safe, easy, and convenient option. And in terms of vehicle travel, really trying to emphasize lower cost management strategies to improve traffic flow as a first response to any congestion problems before we make the step to investment in new facilities. So trying to put a priority on sort of operational strategies that we can use that respond to congestion problems. So any questions on transportation?
Charlie, you said earlier that, you know, vehicles are your main priority and will be continued to be one of the main options, but yet there's so much focus on other modes that are taking away from the vehicle transportation. So it seems like everything that's added or planned is coming at the price of the current or future vehicle travel. So is that been considered? I mean, is there anything that's considering how to deal with it, you know, an increase in the vehicle transportation, or is this just all going to be that we're going to try to kind of nip this down and make kind of force people into these other modes?
Well, that's part of the work that went into the development of the plan. We took a look at transportation and the choices people make historically in terms of what mode they choose, and whether that changes or doesn't change, what that would mean in terms of the use of private vehicles versus the use of other modes. So we have looked at where there would be capacity needs. You know, if we sort of continue trends as they historically have been with a fairly, you know, in terms of commuters, a very high level of use of private single occupant vehicles. But in looking at that, we've, you know, tried to do it in the context of understanding where do we have the opportunity to do things in terms of maybe expanding right away to make some improvements in vehicle, you know, in terms of vehicle travel versus places, areas where we really are restricted. So obviously the downtown is a critical area where the opportunity to sort of, you know, use the old model of expanding and adding lanes really is not a very viable option in the downtown area. So, and there's other corridors where we have some of the problems like that. So it's trying to strike a balance and looking at, as we look into the future, how can we realistically repurpose some of the existing street right-of-way that we, you know, have available to us to, in total, increase the people, you know, the person carrying capacity of that corridor, not necessarily in a means that will increase the number of vehicles. So that's where the emphasis on transit or the emphasis on having sort of pedestrian-oriented districts where maybe more people can walk and have access and have, you know, services available to them that they don't have to jump in their car and go and get. So it was trying to strike a balance. I mean, when you get out on the edge of the city, there still are some corridors where we identify the needs for capacity expansion because the demand in those areas is such that, you know, given the current roadway facility that is there, you know, we're not going to be able to meet all that demand with alternative modes. So there is some expectation. There will still be some capacity expansion, but it's more targeted than it has been in the past.
Well, I can understand that not being able to expand the downtown, but in essence, there's a lot of plans that seems to be reducing the downtown current, what the current capacity is now. So with that, you know, comes the challenge that, you know, we're not, I understand we can't expand it, but reduction is also, you know, creating some challenges. And, you know, on Second Street, we've reduced it to single lane over there. A lot of people comment on that. Public safety's commented on that. Those are things that are challenging in the future and I think need to be kept in mind. So are you, if your antics, you have a problem?
Yeah, I public safety's commented on it. First rule of City Council Fight Club is you don't talk about City Council Fight Club. I mean, public safety has commented.
Yeah, we asked them about the single lanes, and they said that makes it very difficult when they're trying to...
Who said this?
Greg Martin, when he was sitting right here one time, we asked him about
that. Oh, Greg, okay. Have we ever seen any capacity issue where we went down to single lanes, ever? I mean, sure. When?
About the Iraq? About 41st Street? Or else
the Second Street? Second Street.
Right.
Second Street?
Sure.
I think that's ridiculous, but okay.
All right. Can we get back to the plan focus? I think one thing to try to understand.
Wait, but I have another question here.
Yeah, just to follow up on that. So, I mean, I think it's an excellent point. So, there's a difference between not being able to expand versus contracting and forcing people. So, you know, the modal shift will happen in time. And I think the thing we need to do is give people options, but not to beat people, you know, with a stick. And I get the example I'll use is our complete streets policy, which is a perfectly reasonable policy when you read it. But some of the things we've done to implement it, these road reductions, these road diets, 4 to 3 road conversions. I mean, there'll never be enough bicycles in bike lanes in January and February in Rochester to justify converting vehicle lanes. So again, I understand if we have room to put it in the right of way, we can add options for people. But all these places where we've restricted vehicle traffic and we're forcing congestion, I just don't think that's the way we want to go.
Mr. Campion?
I will just add, I mean, there's a few examples that are being bantied about. That 41st Street's a great example of reducing throughput on 41st Street increases the traffic on 37th, which is built to a much higher standard than 41st is. So doing additional traffic trips on 37th versus 41st is actually a huge sustainability win for us. It reduces the amount we have to invest in the maintenance of that roadway versus putting it on a concrete-based roadway at 37th where we can do 10x the volume and not have the same maintenance liability. So beyond the simple, it's reducing the volume of roadway, there's this larger aspect of how do you build a sustainable transportation network? And sometimes that means where you're making huge investments. I mean, the county's investment into 37th Street in that area has been immense. Mm-hmm. Where we're making that investment, we're building those higher grade roadways, funneling traffic out of residential neighborhoods and onto those is a big sustainable, you know, network sustainability win, even if it looks like it's reducing the throughput of that roadway. So I think that it's not always, you know, the surface of we're reducing the surface area allowed to cars. If you look at the investment being made to that traffic is enormous. We've had to completely redo 37th Street. We should be leveraging that asset. That's a brand new, highly constructed, durable roadway. So I just want to make sure, like when we talk about, you know, investment, we can talk about that the raw surface area. That's one way to look at it. But if you look at the dollar investment, I mean, to even talk about bike infrastructure in the same sentence is kind of laughable. The bike infrastructure investment is virtually nothing relative to the infrastructure investment going into automobiles. And we can even take that further. Once we get dedicated lanes for buses, those are putting so many more people through per lane mile that it's not even, you know, then you know, we start talking about the investment to cars. So I think it's just looking at any one aspect of this and trying to dissect a plan that's about a transit network is going to be very challenging. I think you're going to find cases that go in both directions here. I think that there are plenty of residences along 41st Street that are actually happy to have the reduced traffic. I think that there's a lot of beyond the surface value of that area that needs to be considered.
And there, you know, there are very common metrics that are used for what is the vehicle carrying capacity of different road designs. And if you're under 20,000 vehicle trips per day, a three-lane road design is optimal for that. It's much safer than a four-lane road design. We've actually done road diets in places where we actually had room to put bike lanes and four lanes in, but we didn't do it because it wasn't the smart decision. It was less safe for the public. You know, and as we talk about the broader community and how they've reacted to this, I know, Mitzi, you've shared some data with us before about how popular the Complete Streets has been with the public in surveys. In terms of the engagement for this, I mean, what were we hearing from people from the greater public in terms of how we build the city of the future?
Well, it's very clear that people want more options, and I really think that's what the plan's trying to achieve, is a better balance in transportation options than we currently have, which drives us toward having to have a little more emphasis on the modes we've not maybe given as much attention to in the past. So we have a real great opportunity and challenge that a lot of cities would be envious to have, and we have this dense employment center, and we have to figure out how to get more and more people in and out of it. And the transportation options and moving more people with bike, bus, and walking or carpooling is going to be a key set of strategies for us to make that downtown succeed and continue to support more economic development. So as we looked at this plan, we really had to look at what are the components we need to include in this that help us achieve
overarching goal for this regional center to continue to be economically competitive with other regional centers across the country. So I think some of this is about trade-offs. The Complete Streets policy does try to emphasize the system and not every road, every mode on every road, but really let's make sure we have a comprehensive network. I think this plan carries that theme forward and also identifies that in some places we have an opportunity to elevate the convenience of some of these other choices and help get more and more people in and out of our downtown.
And I think to Mr. Canfield's point earlier as well, the if you took a single lane of travel and compared all of the different uses, whether it be automobile, pedestrian, bicycle, any form of transit imaginable, the automobile would be the least efficient of all possible ways to use that particular space. So particularly when you have those congested corridors, it's important that particularly we get transit more effective in those. And the problem with transit is every transit trip starts out with a bike or a walk to the transit stop, and you have to make those routes safe as well. I mean, there are places in Rochester where I haven't supported putting bike lanes, like on the Phase 3 of 2nd Street, but that's not to say that there shouldn't be a safe way for cyclists to get through there, and there's not today. And, you know, that we have a pedestrian bicycle committee that's going to focus on that a little bit, and we've got a very good transit plan that's coming up, but if we don't make these other improvements, the problem with picking and choosing pieces of this is as soon as you take away from the people's access to get to these routes, now all of a sudden the viability of your transit and the number of people able to use your transit is going to go down similarly too. And that's part of a comprehensive plan. As you start playing around with one piece, the other pieces start to fall apart because the numbers no longer look like what you modeled for in the beginning. And I think the public's been pretty clear on this one in the engagement.
All I know is I was part of the planning process, and when we were in the exercise of answering these questions, the question was, do you support the use of bike paths and bike lanes for the overall good of the community? And a lot of people picked that, and then we got in our small groups, they were saying, well, we really like the bike paths because that's, we like to go out with our families, and we like to go out and enjoy those, but I wouldn't feel safe to take my bike, you know, but they had them grouped together, so there wasn't the option to pick one or the other. So then it looked like all the numbers were in support of this. So sometimes it's kind of the way it was presented to, and a lot of people question why we've got an 8-foot bike path right next to a bike lane, and you know, where we're cutting down the traffic in the lane of the road. So those are just things that I'm hearing and that I wanted to share and kind of understand a little bit more on how we're getting to these decisions.
And I think the plan sets the overarching objective of offering more choices and making them more convenient, so we can get more and more people in and out of downtown. Okay, that's overarching. Mm-hmm. Exactly which roads get implemented with which design isn't in the plan so much. That's more of a network decision that we might be making at a later stage. Some of the primary transit networks identified in here, and some of the major roads that carry very high volumes are identified, but not every street is.
So I want to advocate for something. More council involvement in that particular process. Because I can tell that there's trepidation about the overall transit plan because of some of the tactical decisions, right? Like, that's a tactical decision. Is this the bike route or is this the bike route? Tactical. Strategic, I don't know if there's as much disagreement as it seems when we start talking about individual roadways. So I think the council will feel more comfortable, and I'm speaking for members who hold positions I don't necessarily hold, but I can see being able to have a better conversation if it felt like there was more involvement at a tactical level, and it was structured so that there was clear lines of involvement. Because I've also had things happen where, as a tactic, something goes against what our plan is, and I don't feel like I received adequate opportunity to weigh in on something. So I think going forward, as we work out the tactics to be used here, we need to work on making sure we're all looped in. I don't want to have this battle 100 times. So let's figure out the strategy. If we agree on the strategy, you guys can corral us on the right tactic. But I do think if there's specific areas that people have concerns about, let's talk about them. But if this is a strategy conversation, well, if you don't agree with going to this mode of travel, we may have to go talk to DMC, because it's clear that there's a bunch of people circling the strategies on the same point.
Well, one other point to bring up too is that there's a difference in cost between these options, and we talk about off-street paths and on-street lanes, but what a lot of cities like Minneapolis, which is a world leader in this, have done is they've gone to on-street protected bikeways, which is basically it's a physically separated path that uses part of the road right away, and which is fantastic. It is far and away the best solution. It takes on-street lanes are safer statistically than off-street paths, largely because of the intersections, shown over and over again by empirical data. It's important to realize that that would be the best solution, is doing these on-street protected bikeways everywhere, but that comes with an enormous cost. It would have to be done over a significant period of time. And in the meantime, bike lanes are a great way of getting there, and you know that's kind of what Minneapolis's approach has been.
Page 210, figure 235 is the one that I support, so I'm not sure that we can get to that because I don't even think that's in 3, I think that's in 2. But, you know, that's just something that I see is if we want to tactically work together, that's, I think it's a picture of the path in Indianapolis, I believe. Right?
The cultural trail.
Right.
Yeah, and that's...
I mean, you know, if you can create that in the downtown, now you've got safe and well-educated people all know that that's what they should take, that's where they're going. And right now, it's kind of all over the place, and I believe with the bike lanes, a lot of people aren't as feel as safe in those. So, just, you know, part of the planning and part of the discussion. So.
That's optimal for recreational or inexperienced riders. It's a lot of times the serious cyclists, the physicians won't take those roads because they're going far too fast to be safe on them, and that's where having just an on-road route is better.
They shouldn't be going too fast and cycling down through the middle of the downtown. I'm talking about the downtown. This
right.
is the seems like the
yes.
right path. So you know that's
right.
that's
well,
maybe something that we could incorporate
again,
into
the speed limit is 30 miles per
We've
hour.
We've dedicated an awful lot of time to talking about just the bike aspect of transit. So I think we should queue it up for a bigger discussion.
Right.
But I if we need one.
Ultimately, the city council will decide these on a case by case process going forward with some recommendations from staff.
And I don't remember when it was, a number of months ago, we had a little bit of one of our presentations discussion about the bicycle master plan, and we need to revisit that. I mean, that's a kind of a logical next step once you have sort of this framework in place that you look at modal plans.
Yep.
So that, you know, that would kind of be a good place to have this discussion.
Did Mr. Bodovic have another comment?
I agree that the protected bike lanes would be the best. We've been talking about them. We're looking at them. And granted, they don't need to be on every street. But the problem is bike lanes don't go through the middle of town. And we got to make sure that if we're going to be multimodal, and we're going to try to make it so that everybody can get from point A to point Z, they have to have some options. And so there has been some work done to look at protected bike lanes. And I think once we get to that point, people then can reassess whether they think this makes sense or not. But again, I think what Charlie and Mitzi are saying is you got to look at the whole. We have to take a few steps to see what happens, but I think protected bike lanes, the research I've done on them shows that they're very, very well received. The other thing is that when you look at the one from Indianapolis, if you were to do that, and there is some discussion on the North Broadway project. If you do that, do you put both lanes going each direction on one side of the street, or do you separate them? And there's pros and cons to that, too. But I think what we need to do is keep an open mind and kind of look at these things as they come up, because it's a big picture. It's not just those items. It's a big picture we need to be focused on.
All right. Charlie, you want to see if you can get through the rest of this?
Good luck.
So we'll move on to another major grouping, which is housing. Really, again, as I said, given the kind of focus on fiscal development, we have a single goal here, increasing diversity and supply of housing with a small number of policies in support of that, support development of a diverse mix of housing types. We've used this illustration in the lower right-hand corner, and practically every presentation, with the idea of, you know, between single-family detached and townhomes and, you know, apartment-style development, there are a range of other kind of moderate intensity styles that may have application, and particularly as we go forward and look at kind of changing population dynamics where people may have an interest in something that's not necessarily single-family detached, or a larger, you know, a growing number of people have an interest in something that's maybe not single-family detached. You know, developing housing with an eye towards strengthening or establishing a sense of neighborhood community, avoiding, and in doing so, avoid compromising community values or standards, and ensuring that all people have access to adequate housing. So, you know, along those last couple bullets, this plan does part of that. Things like an affordable housing policy is another part of it, so it's not just what we're looking at in terms of physical guidelines or physical direction. Another kind of last major grouping here on environment and health. Want to maintain the commitment to health, wellness, and quality environment. When you think about health and wellness and environment, it kind of spans a lot of different topics, really. You're looking at things like safety and ensuring the development of a built environment that's designed to promote public safety, using the community's green infrastructure as a means to improve health and quality, environmental quality, protecting the quality of things like surface and underground water resources, investing in infrastructure that supports active and healthy living, and considering the implications for health in all policy and implementation decisions related to infrastructure. So let's move beyond goals and policies and talk about implementation of the plan. We have three major groupings of actions or strategies related to implementation. First one being updating the land development manual, which is currently underway. As part of that, looking at things such as the appropriate tools to support transportation development and an infill and redevelopment policy, looking at what can be done to maybe streamline or deal with issues around incentive and restricted development, and how that process can be modified. So that's one focus. We have a second focus, which will then be sort of taking the concepts in this plan in terms of future land use, which obviously done on an area-wide basis, and starting to look at refining those concepts through development of small area plans, looking at things like an infill and redevelopment program that may combine incentives, investment, standards for development, and so on, to help encourage infill and redevelopment or facilitate infill and redevelopment in existing areas. And then finally, looking at where it might be appropriate to start developing design-oriented guidelines to sort of go beyond that kind of baseline set of standards that we have, start to address issues around compatibility and how we transition from one type of land use to a different type of land use in a given area. And then around sort of the general topic of transportation, really a lot of strategies, most of which are not necessarily new. They're things that have been done in the past but will continue to be done in the future. Probably the two big things that are new here is that, as I said before, in a couple months here, we'll have a set of recommendations related to downtown transportation that will kind of walk into a set of actions that have to be undertaken over a course of years. So the implementation of the downtown transit study recommendations will be a key piece of implementation. The primary transit network implementation, so there'll be obviously a land use piece of that, as we have talked about, but also how to accomplish getting the infrastructure, the type of stations, the types of things that give priority to transit vehicles, such as, you know, like traffic signals allowing transit vehicles to proceed through first through the intersection, giving them priority. Different types of infrastructure actions such as that will be part of that strategy. Pedestrian and bicycle action plan is really kind of reflecting and understanding that the plans that we have in place currently should be updated to reflect the policies and goals of a comprehensive plan. Travel demand management is really kind of a new area for the city. Again, this is kind of evolving out of the DMC work, where we've done completed two pilot projects in the last 9 months, one that was focused on City Hall, and the second one with a private employer in the downtown area to try and incentivize people to try different modes for their commute trip to work. And what's happening now is that as part of the DMC work, we've begun the startup phase, what's called a transportation management authority, or a transportation management organization, which is currently housed within the City Public Works framework. But using that, building a program and a set of programs to help people who might want to try different travel choices for their journeys to work, and how to sort of incentivize that that kind of travel choice. Transit plan updates, obviously we've done those in the past, we'll continue to do that in the future. And finally, the plan recommends that we sort of revisit street design policies. This may be getting again a little bit to what Mark was talking about, but thinking about street design and even getting into what Nick was talking about the process would probably be a relevant topic there as well. But you know, how do we think about in terms of using the right of way that we have today in the context of having different modes that have demand on that right of way, and how that translates into design. So those are all the various actions that are suggested in the plan in terms of implementation. Then we'll finish up here finally. We've had some discussion at past presentations about amending the plan and how that occurs and what's the role of the comprehensive plan relative to other community plans. So we've actually refined and added a section that talks about amendments. First of all, kind of one of the key principles here is that the plan calls for a commitment to updating this comprehensive plan every 5 years or revisiting it every 5 years. So sort of revisiting the assumptions, looking at the trends, what's been changing, whether there's been new studies conducted and whether those are consistent or inconsistent with the plan or suggest maybe some tweaking to the plan. But get on a regular cycle of updating and revisiting the plan. And then along with that, we've identified a set of criteria to use that would guide action on any general amendment to the plan. We also have developed a set of criteria for assessing small-scale land use map amendments. And then finally, we included a statement on the relationship of the comprehensive plan to other city plans. And in fact, as we talked about, I think at our last meeting, the comprehensive plan will sort of set the priority and that other plans will fit within the framework that's described in this comprehensive plan.
Mr. Campion?
I noticed maybe almost a page and a half worth of bullet points under the amendment, and the broad statement shall be evaluated for consistency with the following. For the amendment, is it general consistency with the following? Is it an and? Are these anded statements together where you must adhere to all of them? Is it an or? Or are we looking at general consistency for amendments? Because I think we'll be in a quasi-judicial process, I'm assuming, so I'll have to...
which page?
279.
Okay, because some of these titles read out a little differently in terms of the amendment.
Sure, let's talk about all of them because I think all of them are in there. 279 is where I got to the page and a half.
So the general criteria?
Well, at the end you say, at the end it says on page 279 at the top, amendments, all future land use map amendments shall be evaluated for consistency with the following. And man, I'm a fast reader, but I don't think I can cover all of them.
So these are really about the land use designation. It's not really about the overarching goals and policy direction of the plan. This really has to do with, you get a petition, I've got 5 acres and it's shown for medium density residential, but I'm right next to the transit network, and I actually want mixed use so I can do that on the plan. So I'm petitioning you for 5 acres. This is really what we're going to be looking at. Criteria.
This is an and statement. It is all of these. You cannot miss a single one of these and be approved. Is that my, that was my reading when I read it. I just want to be sure, because there's a page and a half, and that's a lot of criteria.
Yeah.
The word and after number 7, well, I lost it.
Well, the and is the conjunctive of the A, B, C, and D.
Oh, I see. Okay. Usually all of the following, or what should that effect mean, and?
All of them. Okay. It's just, it's a lot. I
didn't see where that, at least on that screen, was restricted to attempts to zone tracts of land.
Map
amendments. All future land use map amendments.
It's actually in 278 on the bottom.
So maybe we're looking at a summary rather than the actual language that's going to appear.
So here, what it calls out is that a future land use map will be reviewed, maybe modified, but a small scale map amendment is a change to the future land use map that involves land areas of 10 acres or less. That can be petitioned by an owner. The language isn't there, it's just not.
Mr. Hickey?
So I would take it up and before that, 278, under the heading of general criteria applicability for proposed updates and amendments. And I'll ask the city attorney on this. Even if we chose to adopt this, can we tie the hand of future councils? It says all updates and amendments must meet the following criteria in order to be approved. So we're saying no future council can update this unless it meets these 6 that we've potentially approved. Doesn't seem like that's possible.
Well, you're providing criteria that will be applied for all future applications, just as you've done now for preliminary plats and final plats and GDPs and that.
So what if a future council decides they want to make a change that doesn't meet those 6 criteria? Are we saying they can't adopt the, or can't update the plan in the future? If it doesn't meet the 6 criteria that we
have? That or they would have to change the plan itself.
Well, that's what this is.
But they're saying we can't. I'm sorry, go ahead.
But I think legislatively, I'm not convinced that the land use plan itself is a quasi-judicial document. I think it's a legislative document. So I think that future councils could change the land use plan itself. But if it come across this, the way that's written now, those amendment, the criteria 1 through 6 would have to be satisfied.
Yeah. That was a shorter list than the other items above it.
Yeah. I actually agree with Councilmember Hickey here, because I think you're creating an unmodifiable document. If you're saying that the council's beholden to this, you're creating, because this is the these are the clauses necessary to modify this document. So how can a we can't modify these clauses? Like, let's say we wanted to change one of the clauses in here. How would we do that?
By amending the land use plan.
And we'd have to find it in is congruent with a different clause.
In other words, if you're saying that the land use plan itself could never be changed, I see what your point is.
So
it's a circular restriction.
You could never amend it.
Because I don't think we should have, I don't know that we should have the criteria in here.
Well,
is that
you
your point?
Need a catch-all, if that's the case. The other thing is if you're doing, let's just say you're doing a major update and it's 20 years down the road, you've got comprehensive plan 2060 coming out. That's going to have a different title, different document, and it's going to be based on some new data and trends and projections.
Mm-hmm. But the argument is that because that new document doesn't meet all these criteria, it could never be adopted.
So I'm saying 4 years from now or 3 years from now, if 4 people in the council decide they don't like something,
Or what you could state is that all updates and amendments should be guided by the following guidelines or something less than.
This in the special district or something we would call this the intent clause. The intent of this document was to do X. The only problem I see here is that you're defining the amendment process of the document inside the document. So in order to make any change, in kind of the circular, you're locked in. I don't think I don't know that that is what we would want.
Of course, you could adopt the P2S 2040 prime. And it would be
you. Yeah, that's exactly right. I think it's understood.
Well,
I won't badger.
Badger away.
I have some other. Can we talk about other structural things?
Sure.
You said at the top, and this is a part that I am a little bit pained to bring up because I tend to be verbose, which I'm sure will surprise everyone. I think the introduction is pretty lengthy, and I think recapping a lot of the other documents in here, while was good for this reading because it's new to me, I think in terms of a functional document, I'd like to either have a Cliff Notes version or I'd like to see some of that knocked out because I'm going to be looking at this as part of a binder with the other sections, so the references section to section work better for me, I think. There was one other thing. I thought this entire thing really boiled down well into this list. I don't know what you call this. It's on page, it doesn't have a page number at the bottom. 252. And my only concern here was, as we go, those icons were not super identifiable to me, so I was going to recommend, and I had some recommendations, but I can send them to you instead of going over them here, that we add like a word or two so that as we flip pages, we can see like, oh, this is under the sustainability goal. That's what you're trying to do here. But I thought that section worked really well as like mm-hmm. a good, mm-hmm. Here's the reason we're doing this. Mm-hmm. And you guys let in with what my only other major structural complaint was going to be, which was we don't necessarily get to the tactics. And I know that you guys don't want to talk about that in this document because those tactics probably change a bit more frequently. But without the tactics, without some discussion of that, some of the points seem really, really amorphous, I will say. Until you can translate those into tactics, things like get the missing middle, it's a great thing to write on the paper. And until we know kind of what sort of tactics are being leveled up here, that was one of my concerns, is just making sure that as we sign on to this, we're also all agreeing about some level of tactic we're going to encourage to accomplish those goals. So
it might help when we're working on this, the land development manual updates. And we're coming to you with those amendments to say these are some of the goals and policies that's going to help implement.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Oh, I agree. I think we talked about a new cover sheet for things coming forward. And not just this, not just amendments, but for everything the planning department does that says, like, here's the policies that this meets. Here's the policies that this doesn't meet. You know, this is why the recommendation from the planning department is X. Here's what it's meeting. Here's what it's not meeting. Here's how it's setting us back, if we want to talk about that. Here's how it's pushing us forward. But to think more of every decision we make in terms of
this point.
Food for thought.
So.
I was just going to throw in there. A lot of those criteria that Charlie had listed up there are things that are very similar to what we have in the Olmsted County plan. And it has been really helpful for the county board members and the planning commissioners to just kind of keep those things in the back of their minds as they're evaluating proposals that come to them. And then they have findings of fact to support that. And it's helped in their decision-making process.
That's what I was just mentioning. It's maybe they're not really criteria. They're findings, the guidelines of fact that the council makes.
Mr. Wojcik.
Related to this, I love in there that we talk about the importance of keeping the plan current. This plan only got done because we drove a dump truck of DMC money back and put a bunch of extra money into getting this plan done. how confident are we that the planning department will have the appropriate level of staffing to keep this plan current?
Well, that decision doesn't rest on our shoulders. I put forward a 3-year staffing plan that hasn't been supported yet.
Well, and I wanted to say, well, and I don't know if, I see there's a PASC meeting this Friday, but I don't think there's been a meeting for many months, right?
We stopped once we...
We identified a whole bunch of unfilled positions and unmet needs. What did the county commissioners support for 2018 in their budget? Any new positions?
They actually supported one overfill position to prepare for a transition of someone who will in the future retire. We have to transition their duties.
But none of the other positions that we had talked about? I mean, this is great in theory, but it's clear that we don't have either a commitment for appropriate staffing or the staffing in place to keep something as important to this up to date, and that's something that be a good discussion for PASC on Friday. And then, has PASC approved a work plan, or will they be approving a work plan for the next year at that meeting?
I have a list of department priorities for 2018.
Okay, and then one of the key things in here, and Planning and Zoning Commission hit on this too, was the need for to be able to do small area plans. But right now we don't have a small area planner. How quickly can we close that gap, or how are we going to pull that off?
Well, there are additional resources that were set aside in the budget for us to take some measures to implement this plan. For zoning ordinance and
zoning
development
ordinance,
manual update does not take up the entire allocation. Mm-hmm. Purposefully, so that we have some additional resources to do other implementation steps. We may be able to start with one small area plan, prioritized area perhaps, and have a consultant come in and do that. It still takes staff time to manage a consultant and be the local contact and coordinate these things. Mm-hmm. But there are resources there still in the budget of the city hall.
Okay. All right.
Mr. Hickey.
So, we kind of really started going through it here yet. I don't know how much we want to go through. But I'll revisit the point I made on just the core principles that we never approved. I'm still having a hard time with number 6. I think we're trying to make a value statement and we're turning it into a planning principle. And I think, you know, after your explanation, I think what you're trying to say is in Rochester, we're going to treat all people equitably with dignity and respect. You know, that's a value statement. That's who we are as the city of Rochester. So that's something you put at the front of the document in the introduction, and that's it. I mean, when you repurpose words and you know, say something that's not clear, champion social equity and environmental justice, and as you explained last time, it doesn't mean anything about the environment. It's just say what we mean, and if it's a value statement, that's who we are as a city. Put it up front, but it's not a planning principle.
It can become a planning principle when we're looking at different places in the community where we can invest in infrastructure improvements. And if we have information that identifies maybe underserved neighborhoods, and we're not including that in that decision in terms of perhaps prioritizing that because they have fewer transportation options and pedestrian ramps and the bus shelter, the two small investments that will help them get to transportation, and we're not supporting them. So there is an example there where you can use that guidance to help identify places where providing more equal or equitable access, even in your transportation system, is a priority.
Mr. Walker?
The way this table is laid out, and I saw the earlier versions of this, and it was not as pretty by any means, but these are very common standards that are held up against policies and you know, a lot in different national plans. But I would say if the social justice or social equity environmental justice is that bothersome, it's important to remember there's not a single policy on all of those indicated that are in the plan that solely rely on that as one of the reasons that why that is in place. So even if you don't like the language around it, know that it's not by itself driving any of these policies, but it's an important component to these policies.
There's a different word that could be used instead of playing the champion, if you're comfortable with something
Say it with me. We'll see what you come up with.
I mean, these have meaning in the planning community. Social justice, or environmental justice, social equity, or social justice as well, but these are commonly used phrases in terms of evaluating policies.
Yeah, let's just say what we mean.
In our work, in the planning department, we're going to do more to support social equity and environmental justice than necessarily championing it. There may be issues that come up in which we move into this role of championing, but I think we should always be in the role of supporting it.
Right. That's why it's a value statement. We always do that in everything we do in the city. Treat people equitably, with dignity and respect. And that's what we do. So we don't need to put in a matrix and a chart for individual decisions, because that's just what we do.
I'll go back to something that Mr. Campion kind of touched on, and then the structural construct of the document. Now that we've had the entire document to look at for a little over a month, and so it's helpful to read it all together. Mm-hmm. But the more I read it, I have some difficulty. There is a lot of repeated text and things of that nature, but the thing that probably bothers me the most, it seems to be a mixture of a consultant report, opinion, and an actionable plan. And I think of that, I guess the reason it concerns me, because this is the foundation document, and from this we would presumably make adjustments to our land development ordinance. So many of these become actionable items. So I'm just, to me, the document in its entirety needs a good scrubbing, but then again, I have some concerns on some specific statements as well. I'll give you just one example. So under Goal Policy 3.2, that's on page 254, improve household access to healthy food. All right, so when it comes time to perhaps modify the LDM language, is that now going to be a requirement that development needs to be within a certain proximity to healthy food, and who defines what that is? That's my only concern, is we take some relatively high-level language and, you know, sort of that unintended consequences element. I'm thinking ahead to how that's going to be interpreted and codified in LDM language. So that's where I'm having some trouble wrapping my mind around some of the language, and that's why I say it seems to be a mixture it's not a plan the way I think of a plan. I think of a plan as something actionable, measurable, you know, something I can, you know, take and go do something with. And there are many elements of that here, but some other elements that are a little bit more loose. Mr. Campion.
Maybe, can you talk through that? I mean, I think that is worthy of a response in terms of, let's talk about where we would go with improve household access to healthy food.
I think Council President brought up an interesting perspective, but I don't know if we thought of. Is somebody going to read that in a way that says you can't put houses here if you don't have a grocery store next to it, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think that's where I head with that, but I think it's helpful to hear how other people might read it. And I think there are a couple different things, again, planning world, thinking about how do we do that is making sure that the transportation system is accessible to people, to be able to get them to good services, education, healthy food outlets, etc. Some people in some communities might use that to say, if you don't have a full-service grocery store, you may not be able to put those apartment buildings there. I did not envision that would be the conversation here, but it gives pause to the question.
If I can just catapult, one way I was thinking was to limit residential housing incentives to areas that are within that. We can do, I mean, there's a number of embodiments of the principle here, or the goal, and the flip I'll just throw out as maybe a reflective, hopefully, time for all of us is the existing comprehensive plan is virtually, no, I don't want to say that. It's very challenging to use to get the sorts of insights that I feel like this lays out much more clearly. There have been times where there have been a comprehensive plan change comes up, and I have to scour that document for 30 minutes just to find what staff is referencing in regards to why they support or deny a certain change. I feel like structurally we're getting a lot better, and I actually think the language used here is a lot more clear in terms of the goals and policies. I think my statement was more about some of the encapsulating text that takes place, especially in the beginning where we're kind of setting the table in regards to it. I think we can do that once. I thought we did a pretty good job on section one of doing a lot of that work. I would prefer just to reference back to it rather than reiterating, but I think the council member Saber brings up a reasonable point about, you know, where we have concerns about specific policies. I think understanding where staff intends to take them is a good practice for us to get through.
Mr. Wojcik.
And I think what the explanation was reasonable, and as we put these other documents in place too, we have the opportunity to hash out some of those questions. This is rightfully high level. When I read this, I thought of more like Phil Wheeler's example. He'd always point out the housing out at Salem Corners would not be the kind of housing we would ever want to approve again, because it's very low-income populations, and it has no access to anything. And that would be something that could potentially come into play. I mean, access to healthy foods is one of the major health indicators folks like ULI and the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation are using these days. So I think we just need to be clear on when we go to the implementation step on how that language reads.
An example of how a lot of communities have used that is really promoting and encouraging neighborhood gardens and access to growing their own. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Hickey.
So I'll go on. I'll expand on that a little bit and say I've got concerns with probably a lot of the policies under three. You know, some of these sound harmless enough, but, you know, before we approve something, you know, the words matter. Just like the section on amendments when it says must. I mean, that's a pretty important word that drives a lot of it. So you look under, for example, 3.5, you know, and then you reference back to section 2 where it's been recently amended to say that our goal is to have an 80% reduction in greenhouse gases in the city of Rochester. Well, at what cost? And is that even practical? So something as innocent as 3.5, and all of a sudden it's tied to what? I mean, if we state we're going to do an 80% reduction in greenhouse gases, what would that cost? And is it even achievable? But yet that's in the plan, and that's something we're, you know, potentially going to approve.
You read that statement in this plan?
It was in red, so I assume it was a recent amendment, a November 17th amendment.
So I'm going to hate to put Jeff on the spot, but I'm wondering if it came out of the energy action.
It's out of the energy action.
It's
out of the energy action.
It's in an adopted plan.
I'm sure I voted against that one, too. All right, but that's what I'm saying.
That blasted will of the council.
This, what's it cost to do 80% reduction in greenhouse gas?
What's it cost to not do it?
I'm willing to take that chance.
So 3.5 is a much more general statement. It doesn't have a percentage in it.
Well, but it's in section 2, so it references that.
I think what it comes down to is how do the ordinances require compliance with the land use code?
Yes.
If they require
yes.
compliance with every word in there, you're going to have these types of discussions
yes.
when various applications come forward, because all of these will be applicable. If it picks and chooses, then you have some control as to how much of the land use plan should be considered when a preliminary plat application comes forward or something else. I think the key is going to be the implementation in terms of the ordinances. Right now, the ordinances are very broad. It shall be consistent with or conform with the land use plan. Mm-hmm. And I would think you'd want that to change if you have these types of concerns.
Mm-hmm. So what I think I just heard you say is, when we talk about the land development manual
yes.
and the ordinance, how subservient is that to the actual comp plan?
Do you really want to use the term shall be consistent with the land use plan,
right.
knowing there's things in here that you may not agree with or should not be considered?
Yes.
And that's the discussion you're going to have, because right now, as we sit here, for preliminary plats and final plats and a few others, there's a broad requirement that the application be consistent with the land use plan.
If I would rather have a document we can be consistent with than to have something we're going to say be considered once in a while. Because that puts our staff in this position of every single time not knowing whether or not we're going to hold an applicant to a standards. I have this problem frequently today with whether or not we're applying a standard correctly. If we're going to take the time and pay the money to draft a document, it should be something we're willing to stand behind. If we're not going to do that, then we should, you know, get out of the way now. And frankly, if there's four votes to take this forward and to move on a policy that we're going to let guide us, then we should do that. We shouldn't stand in the way of having a guiding document. But if there's changes you want to see, if it's language changes, stuff like that, that's fine. But I think overall, we should be fairly, we need to reach consensus pretty quickly on whether or not we're going to hold people to developing in large extent based on this document, the way the comprehensive plan has been used today. Otherwise, if we, you know, we don't have that, hash that out, we're going to be fighting over, some of us are going to be on, operating on the idea that this has no applicability. Other people are going to be saying this is the applicable document. We should, we need to hammer that out pretty quickly here.
Yeah. Mr. Hickey?
Is it four votes or five votes for the conference one? Okay.
Now, my take on this, too, is that this went to the Planning and Zoning Commission and had pretty overwhelming support there, but more importantly, there was a pretty big cross-section of the community that showed up for that meeting, including the lobbyists for most of the organizations that work with us. And, you know, there weren't very, very much by way of the objections that were raised at that meeting. So, you know, if there's particular things that concern you with the implementation, we should talk about that in terms of the implementation. But I am, you know, at some point, we've got to update the plan, because we know the current plan ain't very good either. It's caused us a lot of issues, and, you know, we're out to January now, and I think that's, my last count was 25 months after our first target date, so.
I wanted to step back a second. I was under the impression that adoption of a comprehensive plan.
Yeah, I'm looking right now. I may have misspoke. This would not be the first time in my life.
It is five votes.
There's an exception for affordable housing, but that would not apply here.
Okay.
And adoption is five and modification is four?
Amendments, except for amendments to permit affordable housing development, a resolution to amend or adopt a comprehensive plan must be approved by two-thirds vote of all the members.
Yeah, okay, so even to amend. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not the maps, though.
It includes the maps.
Whatever's in the comprehensive plan.
So if we could think of a process to move forward with collecting those areas where you have some concern, I think we can work through that. We just need to know where they are. And we'll need a little time to do edits if that's what we need to do.
Well, and quite honestly, that's why I wanted to have this kind of discussion. I know, to your credit, you've offered to meet with us individually, but I wanted to hear what my colleagues had to say, because some of these things I might feel strongly about, and everybody else said, not a problem to worry about. I am going to be very interested in what public commentary we hear on January 3rd, but having said that, I agree with you. I'm not sure exactly how to, you know, as they say, the devil is in the details. How do we sort that out and yet keep things moving?
I promise to fight you all on this document, and then once we do it, I don't want to fight these policies every single time. So I would hope that you can all meet me on that ground. Like, if we're going to argue, let's argue over the policy, and then let's apply the policy. But let's not argue the policy on every single application that comes forward. So I don't want to leave this vague. I would rather have a guiding document. I'd rather have something that we're going to expect our staff to enforce. And let's debate the policies. We'll do it respectfully. But we'll debate the policy and then go there. If you want to debate the 80%, I'm happy to do that. I don't have my energy action plan in front of me today, but I do remember adopting that. We can talk through that. But I would rather, let's hammer out the policies if it takes having special council meetings get set up. And let's do it that way. But let's go for the plan, and let's codify what we want the community to look like in the plan, and then let's let our staff execute that on a daily basis. That would be my
hope. And that's why I made the comment I did a couple meetings ago, that ideally, if this passes, it should be unanimous or very close to it, because otherwise you're exactly right. We're going to be fighting battles
every time going forward. And I did, you know, I was giving it some thought too when you talk about, some things gave me pause when we talk about, there was a statement in here expanding the complete streets model to complete corridors. And that, I wasn't exactly sure what that meant in terms of what's a complete corridor. What's another example? There's some language like that that I was just left me just kind of with a question mark, and I'm not sure how best to vet all of that so that we can hopefully get to a comprehensive document that people could support. The other one was when you talk about small area models or something like that. What's the difference between that and a special district? That's a rhetorical question. So, but that was something that popped into my head. Sounds like a special district to me, but anyway.
And yeah, back to just, you know, the level of detail, back to the, you know, must on the amendment. You just pick out a random bullet, like on 273, adopt existing and future revisions of the NAPCO Urban Bike Wide Design Guide and the FHWA Separated Bike Lane Planning Design Guide. You know, I've never read those documents, but yet we're going to, not only this one, we're adopting all future versions too. I mean, come on. There's a lot in here, and it all, words matter. So if we approve this, I mean, we need to go a little bit more detail.
I understand Mr. Key's point, but the top does say consider these actions. So I mean, I think that there's a little bit of inconsistency in the wording there. Is the top, the qualifying statement is consider these as near-term actions. But the, if you look at the bullets, it looks like adopt this. And so I think there's just a little bit of inconsistency there about, is that a requirement of the document, or is that simply a consideration that planning department is putting forward as part of preparing this document? But I can see how you'd walk away from that and read it a different way.
And that was the reason for my comment earlier. The document in its entirety is a bit of a mixture between things that are very laudable goals and vision statements, and then there are some things here that could become actionable and will actually be codified at some point in LDM and requirements going forward.
And we're getting late, so I'm just going to rapid fire some of my other ones because they build on some of what my fellow council members said. Can we limit small area plans to using existing zoning processes and not redefining development processes as part of a small area plan? That's something I have infinite concern about with our special district thing, is generating a whole new zoning process through a special district. So if we can look at small area plans, that to me is automatically a win. I'd much rather not have a new zoning process. I'd rather it follow our existing one. So that was one of my concerns. I actually wrote in here, I think special districts are a disaster, and our existing process is really encumbering us with a burden that I think doesn't serve the city very well. And I said, is the city the principal driver of these studies? Because I think, again, this gets back to a staffing plan and how we're going to do that, is I would rather see us develop that, some of that skill in-house rather than having to constantly go out to consultants to do new small area studies. I think that's, we've talked about that before. Limit incentive bonuses, restricted use permits and TIF assistance where developers wander from small area plans. So again, consequences for, I think there's a carrot here, which is you follow it, we give you better access to city assistance where necessary, but also qualify what that assistance is. And then I had just a few more infill redevelopment. One of the key missing pieces was that map that I saw in here that just was missing from section 3 when I was reviewing it, that shows where we have existing infrastructure we're going to try to leverage. I know that's part of part 2, I believe, that we had that map. But qualifying that map and understanding what infrastructure is missing in different areas was really important to me. And then, I felt like the yellow areas were too broad. I would really like to see maybe a second yellow area that says, we have all of the supporting infrastructure here. These are shovel-ready parts of town versus, even if we talk about that area where you pointed out, like we think we can reconfigure the stuff up here to make them shovel-ready, that there's a difference, right? Not quite shovel-ready and shovel-ready. I would really like to have a color on this map that I saw here that's, these are shovel-ready sites. If you're coming to town looking for a place to do development, come on over here. We're ready to go. We've got capacity. So those are my comments.
I have to go back to
All right. Lots of commentary. So, once again, I know we'll have an opportunity for the public to weigh in further on January 3rd, but then part of the discussion will have to be, what do we have to do going forward to hopefully settle on a document, a final scrub document that people could get behind, because I do agree that once we, it's, if anything is adopted, it has to be something that we can't revisit this time and again. That would just be a tremendous waste. So, with that, as on this topic at least, is there anything else for today?
I would just say, you know, I'm still looking for, there was a public hearing and there wasn't very much public commentary with regards to the merits. So if there are folks out there who are bringing forward some concerns at the next public hearing, why not now? You know, let's get these things on the table so we can figure them out. I guess I'm a little bit perplexed at how much concern there is out there just based on the complete lack of opposition at the previous hearing, given that almost most of the affected parties were well represented there. And I'll reach out to these organizations too, but if there's concerns out there, I'm just not hearing them.
All right.
I think we just need to understand your expectations of us between now and January 3rd and the time thereafter. Are you looking to give us your comments and concerns about language prior to that so we can maybe have a week or two to massage that and give something back? Or are you going to wait until the hearing and then take a pause and then have us make some edits? Because we will need to make some edits if mm-hmm. things change, right?
I'd really like to see collated what's coming back as recommendations.
Yes.
And I'm happy to submit mine because I just took a document as I went through. But I'd really like to see us build a backlog of here's the official commentary we've received so that we can tackle it that way. Because right now, you know, no offense to my colleagues, but even at the Planning and Zoning Commission, there was some amorphous kind of non-specific concern, and until we can turn that into concern, it's hard to modify the document. And you guys certainly can't go modifying the document based on one council member's opinion that something should be changed. Mm-hmm. So until we kind of get that the changes together, I can't even weigh in on some of what this would look like. That makes, you know, it hard for me to give feedback.
Okay.
So I'll do that with mine. I'll volunteer to go first. I'll volunteer as tribute.
Yeah.
Wrong crowd.
No, I hear you. As we get the feedback too, I mean, some of this stuff has been out there for months, so I mean, it should be well read by now by most interested parties. So please, as you get those comments or things, let's please distribute it to the entire council as quickly as possible so we can go through.
All right. And I think, you know, it's just a reality. We're going to continue to hear from members of the public. It's not unusual that we have people that have distinct positions on any topic, but they, for whatever reason, won't voice those in a public setting. They would rather, you know, bend our ear, and that's what comes with the territory, I guess. So, but however we get it, we'll have to figure out solution the way through it. So, all right, Mr. Reimer, did you have anything you needed to talk about today?
Not necessarily. We can bring it back up at the next call. Really, the key on the next year's agenda is just the things that you have specific requests with respect to populate that. Tonight, you brought up one about coming back with the library and what the services. Why do we provide it? As an example.
Okay. All right. Anything else? Mayor?
Wednesday is the 34th annual Mayor's Medal of Honor, where about a dozen very great people are being recognized. Most of them will not know until they get there that that's happening, getting there under false pretenses. And so we usually give them a special dispensation so that they can lie do that. But that's Wednesday at 11:30 or at the Civic Center, Riverview Rooms. And got notified today, this afternoon, that Fairway Advertising has put up one of the billboards for Compassion, Rochester City of Compassion. They volunteered to do them. They're now vinyl, so they can move it where they haven't rented a billboard. This one is over by Hy-Vee Barlow's, by the Caribou in there somewhere. But I just heard about that this afternoon.
Good.
So, good deal.
I went to that luncheon last year. It was really neat to see that. I can't make it this year, but it was really good last year.
Yeah,
the year
it's fun.
Fun to watch how you surprise them. But that's not easy to do.
No, it isn't.
Tell you from banquet
very,
running
yeah,
viewpoint.
I've been with a couple of them getting them there by flying.
Yeah. Your credibility is completely shot.
Yeah.
And,
it's good.
All right.
Thank you.
I was going to say, that's the first billboard I've seen that doesn't have a goose on it. You know, like, there's no goose.
Thank you very much.